Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable. Today is Sunday, January 21st, 2018. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And this morning, Florence will lead us in our morning prayer.
Oh my God, I offer as a consecrated gift upon thine altar a heart dedicated to thy service, lips speaking only words of charity, love, and truth, thoughts striving to be only the true thoughts of the mind of God. Help me to endure unto the end, strong in the faith, powerful in the truth, all the influence that I can bring to bear, all the force of tongue or pen that is mine, I offer in thy service. May heaven help, consecrate, and accept.
Thank you. In miscellaneous writings, we today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind. For then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. All right, our subject today is life, the golden text, Romans 8. To be spiritually minded is life and peace. So, Bruce, would you read in Science and Health what Mrs. Eddy says about that passage? Citation 1.
Paul said, to be spiritually minded is life. We approach God or life in proportion to our spirituality, our fidelity to truth and love.
So what does this golden text mean to you all? Today, I want everyone here to get deeply submerged in the idea that God is your life. Okay, go ahead. Who is speaking? Was anyone?
Actually, when I read the lesson this morning for the first time, and I've been studying it all week, but when I read the golden text, I only got as far as to be spiritually minded is life. And that just struck me so powerfully that the only life is spirit. You know, I am spiritual. Everyone is spiritual. We don't live in matter. We don't live by any so-called laws of matter. God is our life. We are unlimited and free. And that is the purpose of our life, to reflect God. And I just loved it so much. I just thought about that one phrase just for a really long time. And then when I got to Science and Health and I saw what Mrs. Eddy said, I thought, wow.
Thank you.
And everything we're learning here is helping us to look away from materiality and to overcome old material beliefs. And so in a lot of my testimonies, I always say that what we're learning here is life-changing. It's because it's teaching me what life is, and all I've learned here is what's giving me life and letting me understand and really live for the first time.
Beautiful. Thank you.
It's one thing to appreciate truth and love, but then it's another thing to be really faithful to them. And I don't know, this week I've been asking myself, how faithful am I to truth and love? Am I always honest in everything? Am I always true to looking for the divine aspect of all of the things that I see in front of me? And this other one, love, that's a huge one. We could talk for days on that. But is anything trying to get me to react adversely, to get disturbed? Irritated, and I know it's happened to me many times, but the true answer is to love more, So it's quite a discipline. Remember, Mr. Evans taught us years and years ago, the answer to everything is love more.
Thank you. You know, the whole world is, the material world is telling you that you live in matter. It's everywhere. You know, you don't hear anyone being announced without giving them their age, how old they are. And all of it, it's just pounding at you, all the drug commercials. So all the fitness routine, the diet, it's all pointing to life and matter. Every day you start your day with God is life, God is my life, God is the only pure and perfect life. And then, of course, God is mind, God is my mind, God is the only pure and perfect mind. And you live with those thoughts throughout the day. You really have to submerge yourself into knowing God is your life and it is in spirit, not in matter. I love, too, and I've been using it because a few weeks ago, Florence's testimony, in which she quoted from an old-time hymn, "Be thou my vision, O Lord of my heart." So sometimes throughout the day, you know, if I'm needing to see what's truly going on, I will pray that. Be thou my vision, O Lord of my heart. But you can also say, as we know, you can say other things. Be thou my health, O Lord of my heart. Be thou my life, O Lord of my heart. Be thou my strength, O Lord of my heart. Talk to yourself during the day, knowing that this is the truth.
I think it's really beautiful because that's what's teaching us to be or to know who we really are. We are not of ourselves. As Peter's song says, I find God and I find me. So all we are is God. And so that identifying, I find through that hymn, so beautiful.
Thank you. It is. It's just such a beautiful divine thought to stay with you. And as Dale said, you just need one thought, just that one thought, the golden text, or be thou my vision, O Lord of my heart. One thought to keep with you, but work it and know it to be true and let it counteract the harsh noises of the day. Now, I found something, and this I found a while ago, that I found very helpful, and it's an article. It's on our website. It was in our Healing Thoughts number 59. And it's called Sight. The article is called Sight by A. Kroger. And sometimes, you know, we might have struggles overcoming this belief of life in matter. And maybe things can be stubborn. Maybe we don't get a healing quite as quickly as we would like. And I found this to be so helpful. I'm going to read the first few paragraphs of it. Okay. A letter written by a Christian Science practitioner to a patient born totally blind. This letter brought complete healing to the patient after having several months of treatment. So the letter reads, "My dear, I want you to see what must take place in your consciousness. With the utmost clarity, you must see that material eyes do not need healing, for matter does not see, and nothing we can say or do about it can ever give it that which it never had, namely sight. What must be cast out is the lie about the truth, namely, that sight is material, not spiritual. Then you may rejoice that you have come to the point in your journey from sense to soul where divine love is forcing you to lay hold on what Mrs. Eddy says in Science and Health, quote, metaphysics resolves things into thoughts and exchanges the objects of sense for the ideas of soul. I thought that was such an important point. So if any of you have come to a point in your experience where maybe healing isn't coming that easy, let yourself rejoice that you have come to this point where you are being forced to grow further and to understand the unreality of what?
Matter.
Yes, life in matter. That's something we've, you know, you get taught all your life, so maybe it's not that easy in coming, but if you work at it and are consistent, you use those 390 to 393, the command statements, you keep at it. The scientific statement of being, man is not material, he is spiritual. You will make progress, and you can overcome. I mean, if this person was healed of blindness, that's a case of blindness. Now, maybe there are other problems you're having that seem aggressive. Mrs. Eddy had told a student once who was having trouble with a healing that they needed to know more clearly the unreality of matter. It's a very important concept, and that's why we take a proactive stance to our living by starting it with God is our life. Be thou my life, O Lord of my heart. So that means that you live not because your heart beats, not because your lungs pump up and down or whatever else they do, or the brain, blood, bones, all those things. That's not why you live. You live because God is life, and you are his expression. You have to keep that firmly in mind always when everyone else and everything else and every article you read is telling you something else. Christian Science is preventative as well as curative, and in knowing this daily and keeping yourself separate from the material world, coming out from the material world and being separate, you can prove this. Any comments?
Yeah, I feel that, you know, the more you know this, at least for me, the less fear I had. And it just, fear is the foundation of all the troubles. So it's so important, as you say, to keep knowing it. Even if you don't feel it yet, just keep knowing it, and it takes root in your heart.
Thank you.
And that is how you love God. You love this truth. You cling to this truth. You demand this truth to be manifest in your life. That is what it means to love God. Not love any of the nonsense that human beliefs throw at you. The reason I this came to me was Lawrence's comment. That is perfect love, and perfect love casts out fear. And when you love God supremely, you can't help but love your neighbor.
Mrs. Eddy asked us, are you grateful for life, truth, and love? So that goes with that.
Exactly.
And we had a very important Bible study yesterday. They're all important, and I hope those of you who can't attend Saturdays listen later. But it was brought out, I think it was Colleen, about the flood tides of love. You know, we can't have little trickles. It's the flood tides of love that sweeps away the rubbish of mortal mind and will not only do it for you, it will do it for others. If you go into a group of people who are all talking about life and matter and you have a little trickle, well, your little trickle is not going to do very much. You'll get swept away in there. Era, if you don't stand quarter at the door of thought and have flood tides of love, go in with the authority of Christ. So I would like, Linda, for you to read the watching point, please.
Okay, it's watch number 196. Watch lest you work to remove from yourself errors that cling to you. Instead of realizing that you must overcome your belief in their reality, your fear of them, and the suggestion that, as a child of God, you can have a mind other than God, divine mind, then they fall away of their own accord. Iron fillings adhere to a coil of wire through which an electric current is flowing. When the current is shut off, the iron fillings fall away. In like manner, the various manifestations of air cling to us because of our belief in the reality of air. When our sense of the reality of air is overcome, its manifestations fall away of their own accord. End quote.
Thank you. This is why this submergence in the truth is so important. Because when you have that, when you're filled with it, these beliefs can't cling to you. Now, Carol, you read number 3 in Science and Health, the first paragraph. Mortals suppose that they can live without goodness when God is good and the only real life. What is the result? Understanding little about the divine principle which saves and heals, mortals get rid of sin, sickness, and death only in belief. These errors are not thus really destroyed and must therefore cling to mortals until here or hereafter they gain the true understanding of God and the science which destroys human delusions about Him and reveals the grand realities of His allness. Thank you. Now, what's the common word in those two?
Cling.
Cling. When the illusion of sinner's sickness tempts you, what are you to do?
Cling steadfastly.
To God and His idea.
Yes. Watch what you're clinging to. Watch where you're directed. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Sometimes when I'm going through, you know, something, I just think to myself, I'm a spontaneous reflection always of God's ideas. And, you know, and that brings light. And I try to picture myself pushing the clouds out of the way and not really giving them a lot of, you know, value, but just allowing that clear reflection, that clear line of light to come to me.
Good.
That's
speaking up quickly to the false voices, declaring the truth for yourself. That's using the command statement. And that's always most important.
That's what it means to agree with thine adversary quickly.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's like a, you know, it's like a counterfeit $20 bill. How do you tell it's a counterfeit?
I'm knowing what.
When I know the true dollar is.
When you know what the right one is, the counterfeit is easy to detect. When thoughts come to you that are counterfeit. And they will. How do you detect that they are counterfeit? By filling your thought with the truth and keeping it there. Then when these counterfeit beliefs come to you, and they will every day, you will recognize that they are the counterfeit, not real.
I also noticed that sometimes when you go to the stores and I have seen people give like a large bill, $50 or $20, the cashier will put it up to the light to see the watermark or whatever it is. So I guess
you know, your ideas, you have to also subject it to the same thing, put them to in the light of God to see whether they are from Him or not.
Very good.
That's good.
Yeah, very
Thank
good.
Thank you. I just love Luann's painting, and Love is the Liberator. It just showed for me, like I visualize that a lot, you know, just the idea of science and health and just light going straight to God, to me, to you know, peace and perfection. And if I'm going through a little something, I just picture that painting, and it's a help to me.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I guess, was it yesterday, Luann was saying that this work for the Love is the Liberator has given her life meaning, her paintings meaning and direction.
Ah, so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. They certainly are, and it's Luann's heart and her love for God and for the science that shines through them. Want to say anything, Luann?
Well, thank you very much for that, but yeah, I really feel like since I started doing my paintings that they kind of grow along with my growth in science. And there's a lot of great artists out there who do a lot of great paintings about religious settings and things like that. But I really feel like God is speaking through me in my simple painting. And I don't know, I feel very blessed that this has become a purpose for me. I found a part of myself in doing this work, so I'm very grateful to have this opportunity to do it.
We are very grateful.
We are too. Yes. Because you love to do it, and it's the love that shines.
It's interesting. She said that that's what Peter says in the song. He found he found himself when he found God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a wonderful thought. You know, Gary and I were talking about, we had a wonderful membership meeting on Thursday, and to hear how all of you are growing spiritually and how you're demonstrating your positions. This is what the church is about. You know, I don't have to get involved on Wednesday night. What are you going to be reading? You demonstrate the readings, and every week we all say, can they get any better? They've been wonderful. You demonstrate all your posts, positions, your proofing, whatever it is that you're doing, your testimonies, paintings. This is what a church should be doing, teaching you this, so you can go and bless others with it. But we are so grateful that for the growth we see here.
And I might just add along that line, that is why we don't have a lot of rules in this church. Each one of us has one task in life, and that is to demonstrate what God has for you to do each day. And your relationship with God should be strengthened by membership in the church. The more rules a church has, the more that interferes with your relationship with God. And I'm sure that is why Mrs. Eddy established the organization the way she did, with all those estoppel clauses.
Was to be a spiritual organization, and that's not an oxymoron, something that's possible as you all learn to listen to God, each and every one of you, one by one. And it is a church of the people, for the people, and by the people, to quote Lincoln. And you feel it. I'm just, when I listen on Sundays, I hear all the different voices, people, all the people contributing. It's thrilling to me. And now, some of you don't know, but a while ago, well, Bella sent me this YouTube of this man playing the Lord's Prayer on bells. It was the most beautiful thing I ever heard. And so I wrote back and said, well, we have to get bells for our church. And I've kind of put it on Bruce, which as you, I love to do. So he got, and we got the probably the least expensive bells. And then what happened, Bruce, something?
Well, each bell, two octaves on the set, is labeled with a little sticky label on the top of the handle indicating the note that it represents. So when the shipment came, there was one label missing, which was no big deal. So I wrote him back and said, there's one label missing. Can you just send a label for this bell? Well, instead, they sent us a complete new set of bells. So we have two sets of bells.
And now, Bruce, I mean, it started at Christmas Eve. He and Bryce have been playing the bells for us, and many of you have commented on it. It's beautiful. There's a purity about it. And Bryce is the former Sunday school children, boys. So, and I'm praying, too, that more and more, part of my prayer for this was that we would get children involved. I know my southern cousins and their churches, they have a bell choir. So I said, well, if they have a bell choir, we can have a bell choir. And have children involved in it, because everyone wants to feel needed. And Bryce is doing a beautiful job. And I'm so grateful to Bruce for taking this on. So this is how we grow. I would like to also say, in that last Science and Health that Carol read, says science which destroys human delusions about him, about God. And I've given this before, but it's a very important definition of delusion. It's a fixed, dominating, or persistent, false, mortal conception, resistant to reason with regard to actual things or matters of fact. So, to summarize that, it's a stubborn human mind that refuses to change or learn. That's what a delusion is. So if you ever feel like you're having a hard time with yourself, just pop that delusion. It has no power over you. Thou wilt bind the stubborn will, wound the callous breast, make self-righteousness be still, break earth's stupid rest. These delusions are hard going sometimes, but that's okay. We keep persisting.
This question is so wonderful because as you were going through it, I realized that I've become much better on new claims like a sniffle or whatever, and getting rid of those. And I've been ignoring things that appear to have been with me for life, and I've been starting to overcome that, and in the sense that I'm working on them now, but why am I delusional about them? Because I cling to them, I own them, I live with them, I complain about them, and now it's time to get rid of them.
That's wonderful, Mike. Thank you. It's acute or chronic, and the chronic are sometimes, yeah, they seem to go on and on and on, and that's where we got to take note and realize, yeah, we have been deluded in some way. And then get into that, what I'd read about in the article site. Rejoice that you're up to, at this point now, that you need to go further in your understanding about the allness of spirit and the unreality of matter. If matter is unreal, the body can't really be making these complaints, can it?
No.
It's only mortal mind. Mortal mind, you can shut up, ship out.
Martha Wilcox, in one of her articles, talks about even when you feel it, know that it is not true. That was so helpful, because when pain comes, it's just as if this is real.
Yes.
This is real. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
It's funny, sometimes if you have a real pain or something that you won't give up, all of a sudden, if somebody comes along and distracts you onto something else, you realize later the pain is gone.
Yes,
well,
it was.
It's not there.
Absolutely. And remember the story in Science and Health about the man who limped and hobbled and was in pain, and then he would have to go up on stage. And he forgot it all. He was fine. You know it's all happened. I know people who have been readers, and maybe they feel they just can barely talk. And they get up and get in front of the microphone, and suddenly something comes over them, their heads clears, and they read a beautiful service. Is that not true?
Yes, it is true.
Yes.
I like the reader's prayer. I think that's wonderful to keep you in the moment and know that it's God that's doing the speaking.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, it helps take you out of it. There's no you. It's just God.
It is a beautiful prayer, and if those of you who aren't familiar with it, all of us should know it and work with it because it's practical. Thank you, Colleen. Jeremy, how do they find it on the website?
Well, it is under articles, but it's also on the Wednesday readings page. Right on the top of that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Should all have a copy. And anyone who has trouble, and some do, speaking in public, that's a wonderful prayer to work with. Also, the first chapter in the Bible of Jeremiah, where he said, I'm just a child, I can't speak. God tells him, be not afraid of their faces. All of these things, any of our so-called limitations, we can overcome as we are knowing God is our life. In Science and Health, on page 193 to 194, Mrs. Eddy says, it has been demonstrated to me that life is God, and that the might of omnipotent spirit shares not its strength with matter or with human will. It's a powerful statement. And then she says also, in our lesson, number 6, mortal man can never rise from the temporal debris of error, belief in sin, sickness, and death, until he learns that God is the only life. Important point. No other life. And then, the next paragraph. A wicked mortal is not the idea of God. He is little else than the expression of error. To suppose that sin, lust, hatred, envy, hypocrisy, revenge have life abiding in them is a terrible mistake. Life and life's idea, truth and truth's idea, never make men sick, sinful, or mortal. So what does that mean to us? A wicked mortal is not the idea of God. He is little less than the expression of error.
The mortal man will never be God's idea.
That's true.
Or the real man, and you shouldn't try to make the counterfeit what it could never be.
That's very true.
Also makes me think of what Jesus said about casting your pearls before swine. Not to worry about that part of it.
Thank you. When you see wicked mortals know the truth, this is God's idea, perfect man. And you separate the error from the person. But, you know, we've seen, and I call it the ditzy Christian Scientist, they see some terrible things going on, and they, oh, it's God's the perfect man, it's there, right there, it's the perfect man. That's not the perfect man. Perfect God, perfect man, but that's not it.
This passage is very helpful because it teaches me to not be stupid about somebody who's misbehaving themselves and misinterpreting it. I know error is error, and there's no other thing to call it. And I need to learn it, and maybe the other person needs to learn it. That's between them and God. But we're all on this onward march, Godward.
It also means... Go ahead.
I was going to say, because the added part to the casting pearls before swine is that they will turn and rend you. So if you ignore the... And it's going to get meet you in the end.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. As Christian Scientists, do we tolerate error at all?
No. That would be an offense to God.
It would be an offense. Thank you. So what one of the things that this means is that we don't enable wicked mortals. We don't enable wickedness or mortality. It's not the truth about the real person. But out of love for the person.
And we rebuke sin, which is one of the daily duties.
Exactly. No matter where we see it, in our children, in ourselves, at work, in our church.
And, you know, on the forum, Mike quoted Pratzer, and in one place where he was talking about, like, in Noah, do you want to explain that or paraphrase that a little, Mike? If you have someone in your family who is not go ahead.
I was going to say I don't have that in front of me, so.
All right. Well, it's just that point that Gary was making. If there's someone close to you or in your family, just as is Noah, he didn't try to save all the wicked people and tell them to get on his boat. They all would have sunk, right?
Mm-hmm. He talks about being dragged out of the ark.
Thank you.
People. I think that was very important. And then
yes.
You can't help them either because you've been dragged out of the ark.
Yes.
And it's lost.
Yep.
This is Michael and from California. Hi, good morning. Hi, I just had a question or I guess comment question. I've been told and read a little bit about Mrs. Eddy's, I guess, sometimes very decisive way she would, fire or dismiss some of her staff if they weren't up to par. But would you kind of consider it like that, like in the same way you're talking about Noah, that I guess the wicked mortal behavior is not to be tolerated and dismiss it and get it out of your house and not allow it to, I guess, contaminate the rest?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
But there's always...
Go ahead.
No, but there's always a time where you've given the opportunity to, you've worked and worked and worked and worked, you know, trying to see the real man, love the real man. But if they don't change and persist in the error, why take it along with you?
Exactly. And what quality of thought did Jesus rebuke the most?
Righteous.
Self-righteous.
Right.
That was the greatest wickedness, apparently. Yeah.
Right.
He rebuked the prideful, the thought that was not interested in the truth, not interested in changing.
The hypocrisy.
Yeah, and there's a article somewhere about Mrs. Eddy's coachman who went to pick up people at the station to bring them to Pleasant View when they were going to be interviewed to work there for a year. And he and the article said that when he had a conversation with them after picking them up and bringing them to Mrs. Eddy's house, he could tell whether they were full of pride or whether they were humble. And if they were full of pride, he would just leave the coach there. He wouldn't put the horses away. Because he knew that in a few minutes he was going to take them back to the station and take them back to where they came from.
And so it was.
And so it was.
She couldn't afford to have that in her home. She knew what it would do. The human mind, it would attack her because that's what it does. Especially if it's not humble. If it's mold, you can mold it and it's workable. It's one thing. But if it is self-righteous and thinks it knows, it's something else. And I can always tell, you know, sometimes here or elsewhere, and I'm sure Florence too, if you ever have to correct someone, if you don't see them again, it's very telling that their pride is just too great.
Mrs. Eddy, from what I've read so far, she always would give them a chance and would, you know, talk to them, and then she would leave them to learn their lessons, she would say. They would have to learn.
Yes.
Also, didn't she work with, if you were 10% good, she would work with the 10%?
Absolutely.
You know,
yes.
You don't give extra life to the air, but if you find 10%, you can work with that.
But that was not in her home. Her home was different.
She right. I didn't mean it like that, but just the thought, like the idea of with anyone. Just you work with the good that is in of them. You know.
Absolutely. That's how the job gets done. Because no one is
perfect.
Yeah, no one is 100%. So you work with, yes, the good. And then you know that good will grow and mm-hmm. prosper. It's the good seed.
Within Plainfield, if something like that was happening, I mean, I'm just hypothetically, I guess you would be willing to at least either, I guess, deal with it or maybe dismiss it or something like that, I guess. Right?
I can answer to that. I'm still here.
That's right.
Yeah.
I also want to say in particular to what Michael had said, one particular time, Mrs. Eddy rebuked Laura Sargent, who was with her for, I think, 23 or more years. And Mrs. Sargent broke into tears. Well, she left and broke into tears. Mrs. Eddy called her back and said, "Why are you crying? You know that I'm not rebuking you. I'm rebuking the error."
Absolutely.
That was huge.
And Michael, you do need to fix your smoke alarm because we hear it chirping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, that's why you get muted. Not because we don't want to hear you, but because of that.
Just wanted to say about people coming to Plainfield, and the question is, do they stay or they leave? There's a passage in Science and Health that says, "Error excludes itself from harmony."
Thank you.
And if you come to Plainfield, don't worry about the errors. Just be worrying about thinking about the willingness to drop them. The willingness to see, recognize this is the way, and I'm humble enough to recognize. I know I got a lot of things to learn and let go of, but I'm willing to make those footsteps. If you get to where you're clinging on to something, well, the error will exclude itself from harmony. If you cling with it, you'll go with it. Just the process.
Here's that clinging again, the clinging. What are we clinging to? Your pride? You're clinging to God, life in God. And if you're not prideful, you'll take correction gratefully. And Florence will testify, any correction you've ever gotten here is minuscule compared to what went on here. So,
that's for sure.
Yes, with Mrs. Evans.
So to answer your question, Michael, we have infinite patience with everyone. We are so grateful that someone had infinite patience with us. And anybody who has the humility to grow, take correction, and serve God's cause is more than welcome.
And,
thank you.
Clinging to the air just takes you out, I see.
It does. You will eject yourself.
Error ejects mm-hmm. itself.
And that's why we are so grateful for people like Mike, who has taken correction and has just kept coming, which shows a great humility. And that's the workable person. It's perhaps one of the most important qualities of being here. And it is also enables you to run the long race. We had that beautiful contribution on our forum by Parsons, who I guess I will have Gary read it now. Gary?
Yes. From Proverbs 4, verse 27. Turn not to the right hand nor to the left. End quote. What the age wants is people who have the nerve and the grit to work and wait, whether the world applaud or hiss. It wants a Bancroft who can spend 26 years on the history of the United States, a Noah Webster who can devote 36 years to a dictionary, a Gibbon who can plod for 20 years on the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, a Mirabeau who can struggle on for 40 years before he has a chance to show his vast reserve, destined to shake an empire, a Farragut, a von Moltke, who have the persistence to work and wait for half a century for their first great opportunities, a Garfield, burning his lamp 15 minutes later than a rival student in his academy, a Grant, fighting on in heroic silence when denounced by his brother generals and politicians everywhere, a Fields, untiring perseverance, spending years and a fortune laying a cable when all the world called him a fool, a Michelangelo, working 7 long years decorating the Sistine Chapel with his matchless creation and the Last Judgment, refusing all remuneration, therefore, lest his pencil might catch the taint of avarice, a Titian, spending 7 years on the Last Supper, a Stevenson, working 15 years on a locomotive, a Watt, 20 years on a condensing engine, a Lady Franklin, working incessantly for 12 long years to rescue her husband from the polar seas, a Thurlow Weed, walking 2 miles through the snow with rags tied around his feet for shoes, to borrow the history of the French Revolution and eagerly devouring it before the sapbush fire, a Thackeray, struggling on cheerfully after his Vanity Fair was refused by a dozen publishers, a Balzac, toiling and waiting in a lonely garret whom neither poverty, debt, nor hunger could discourage or intimidate, not daunted by privations, not hindered by discouragements. It wants people who can work and wait. Orison Swett Marden.
And you see, that is certainly what we saw in Noah. We talked about yesterday, he was building that ark for how long, Charity?
Well, it was 55 to 120. They don't know for sure.
Decades. And people mocking him, and no sign of rain, and no sign of anything going on, and he just kept at it. And this is what it takes, and through sunshine or storm, whether you get praised or criticized, you just keep your head held low and you keep at it. You'll make tremendous progress if you do. This is your covenant between you and God. I was going to have Jeremy speak to this, but he's gone upstairs now. But, you know, early on when he first came, well, first we had some advising him not to have YouTube, that we don't use YouTube, but he knew that YouTube would be a good thing, and he did it anyway. And I think at least for a year or so, we hardly got anybody watching, listening. And now after, I don't know how many years, 3 or 4, maybe 4, anyway, we reached our 800 subscribers on YouTube. Plus we have thousands, in some cases 10,000 views, people viewing us. But Jeremy just kept at it, and I know at times he wondered if he should. Maybe he did make a mistake. Maybe we shouldn't, YouTube. So you listen to God, you follow what God tells you, and you just keep at it. And that's a lesson from Noah. And it's a lesson of a man who walked with God and of a man who knew his life was in and of God. So we will end now with Bicknell Young, 1937 College, page 61 to 62.
Mrs. Eddy says, never record ages. Age should be, and when properly understood, is more full of power, wisdom, and victory than youth. Instead of losing one's faculties with the passing of years, as one sees God more clearly, his activity increases. His spiritual sense becomes more acute. His intelligence and perception are greater. There can never come a time when God's man can or must go downhill. Onward and upward through all eternity, his way must be. There is no time. This is the time it has always been. Last week, last year, 100 years ago. It makes no difference which, because they are all the same. Even while we speak of the present moment, it is gone. This shows the unreality of time. There is no before or after. Nothing is a minute old, or a day, or a week, or a year. So now is exactly our age. We cannot be younger or older than now. Time has nothing to do with it or you. The ideas of soul can never grow old. Hopeless, apathetic, depressed, or vicious thinking makes for age, while enthusiasm, hope, love of humanity, and spontaneity will keep us always young. When we lift our consciousness into the spiritual realm, fixing our thoughts on the glorious, fadeless, undying, present realities of the universe, filled with ideas that are ever new, our whole being becomes rejuvenated, and we are refreshed and inspired by the everlasting truth of being.
That is life in God. So we thank you all for joining our roundtable discussions this morning, and we will go forward now and have a powerful service that goes out and blesses our world. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.